That's for my crazy day. My packed commute. All those unread emails in my inbox. But I'm getting stronger, faster, and pushing myself further every day. I don't care if I'm not like everyone else. This punching bag is the best way to end my day.
Fearless is knowing yoga isn't your style. That's the power of the Blue Cross and Blue Shield Federal Employee Program. Learn more about our healthy benefits at fepblue.org/getmore.
No, I'm not for sale.
You are Locked On Colts, your daily Indianapolis Colts podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome back to Locked On Colts, ladies and gentlemen. I'm your host, Matt Dainley. Thank you guys for joining me here on a Wednesday. It's another day, another beautiful off-season here for the Colts. We've got a little bit of OTAs we may try to get into and just whatever, but we've got a great guest for us tonight, Zach Kiefer from the Indianapolis Star. Zach, how you doing, man?
I'm doing terrific. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Appreciate you coming on. Let's just kind of start off the top here. We've talked a little bit about OTAs on the show in the past, week or so like that. But is there anybody, and I'm just going to cut right to the chase here as far as guys a little under the radar here. Is there anybody that you've paid attention to or that is getting a lot of attention paid to them that may not be one of the bigger guys on the roster? Like, for example, maybe the Brandon Williams acquisition, or, I mean, just any of the guys like Luke Rhodes. I've heard there's a lot of talk about him at the inside linebacker position, and they're doing a lot of maneuvering around at some of these positions just to kind of see what guys are made of. Is there anybody right that's kind of flowing under the radar that you've seen or that you've heard something about that's getting a little bit of attention?
Yeah, I'm hesitant to jump to any big conclusions, as you know. And just talking to players and coaches, I mean, they're not playing football right now, you know?
Right.
And we've seen training camps in the past, and we've seen OTAs in the past where guys have looked fantastic. I mean, this is a different set of circumstances, but I go back to 2015, and Dron Carter was a stud every day. And they weren't wearing pads, and but he made plays every single day that made you say, wow. And that was a direct quote from Pep Hamilton, and he was right because I saw it with my own eyes. And then when they got under the lights, et cetera, he just shrunk, and he didn't even make the team. So I'm a little hesitant to really delve into that from what we've seen so far, because what we've seen has been so limited. A couple of guys that stood out to me, and these are probably bigger names than you're looking for, but Terrell Basham really liked what I've seen so far. And yes, it's not, you know, a game situation, and yes, you're not bringing down quarterbacks, et cetera, but his athleticism pops. It just jumps off the field. You're watching him, and you say, that guy moves faster than the other guys around him. Mm-hmm. And then the other guy is interesting is Zach Banner. I mean, I don't know if he's ready just yet, so it might be a little bit of a project down the line, but he's so striking in his – he's just a massive human being, and that's even coming from, I mean, look, we're around NFL
other
guys all
other
the time,
massive
right? We're
human
used
beings
to being huge guys. I mean, Anthony Costanzo's a huge guy. Zach Banner is a different level of huge guy. So he's caught my eye. He's got the longest arms. He might be the biggest human being I've ever seen. But Terrell Basham is someone I'm going to watch a lot in camp because he's a guy coming off a lot of production at the MAC level. Mm-hmm. And look, I mean, the door's open, right? I mean, the pass rush department is desperate for some help. So he'll be a guy I'm watching. But, you know, it's going to be interesting. Guys like Philip Dorsett, you know, guys like that, that I don't know how much of a safe spot they have on this roster. I don't see him getting cut in the near future. Mm-hmm. He's got that one trait that Chris Ballard loves, right? He's got that speed, that right trait you can't teach, right? That thing right that jumps off the – off the tape, off the field, whatever you want to call it. So I'm kind of going in with open eyes. I think the team is too. I think they're playing around with all kinds of guys in different spots on defense. But it's going to be interesting to see. And I think we're really not going to get the real meat of it until we get to about 2 or 3 weeks into camp.
Yeah, it is always hard, but like you said, you notice the athleticism with Basham, and that's kind of something I think that they're trying to see right now. Anyhow, they want to see the guys that are running the quality routes that are showing, and their athleticism is striking to the coaching staff and to those around them, for that matter. I mean, size can only do you so much in Banner's case, or something, you know, stuff like that.
Right.
But you know, just the intrigue, as far as I'm concerned, as far as on the defensive line, about them moving Hankins from, you know, the 0 to 3 to the 5 tech and just moving him all over the place. That's that to us as Colts fans and people who cover the Colts is interesting, because he did play a hefty amount of 3 tech last year in New York. And to see him outside at 5, I only caught one snippet on film of him outside. But just the pieces that surround that defensive line, that is so intriguing going into the season, because you really just don't know who's going to be there. And there are so many possibilities for these guys. Henry Anderson could really feed off of Hankins' ability to move up and down the line, and Hassan Ridgeway could really break out some. I think you look at the past season or whatever, and you see some of these flashes on tape, and then you see that a little bit of it's coming together, and then you know, your imagination can only run wild with assuming who's going to feed off of who.
Yeah, that's a good point you bring up, because I've gone back and forth on that position unit, right? It could be the strongest on the defense.
I know, isn't
that
crazy?
Not saying a lot, or it could leave you wanting for more, because we don't know about Langford, we don't know about Anderson. You assume both will come back and be at the level they were at for most of 2015.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see Hankins playing the 5. I mean, I just can't see that consistently happening. But the thing is, David Perry is going to be on this team, and Chris Ballard has essentially told us that everything that happened in Arizona, he's going to get a second chance. They like what he can do, and I think this line is a lot better if David Perry is your second nose tackle. Because if he's your starter, then you're just not getting that penetration. He's been okay. But if he's your number 2 and Hankins is your number 1, and that's why you're paying Hankins what you're paying him, right?
Right.
To make the linebacker's job a lot easier. And I think the linebackers are going to love having Jonathan Hankins, because they haven't had a decent nose tackle or even a great nose tackle since Brian Grigson took over in 2012. And we're 5 years in. We're going into 6 years. And that's one of the reasons Ryan Grigson isn't with the Colts anymore, because that defensive line has just been bloody for so many years, putting more pressure on the linebackers. And oh, by the way, the linebackers weren't any good either.
Right.
So it just sort of compounded the issue. So the penetration Haken can get ideally at that nose spot makes everything better for guys like Anderson on the edge and Langford, and maybe even Terrell Basham down the line. But that's an interesting group. I mean, that in the secondary, just because of the young guys are going to be the position groups on defense I'm looking at the most during training camp, because it's wide open right now. And I mean, those guys are big question marks, really. Besides Hankins, I mean, I just think Langford and Anderson are just huge question marks right now.
Oh, I agree totally. And you know, we really don't even know what, if, or any Grover Stewart's going to bring to the table at all. And with
talk about question marks.
Right. But with David Perry there, if they do keep him and he does make it through camp and onto the 53, then he essentially, if they want him as that number 2 zero, then they're going to have, that's basically taking T.Y. McGill's spot. Now, T.Y. McGill, in my opinion, from what he showed last year, his ability to get through and kind of collapse the pocket from the interior, I think that he's too important to the makeup of the defensive line as a whole and to kind of shut him out behind David Perry. So that opens up, you know, where does he move down the line? Does he kind of take over what Hankins did last year in New York as a 3-tech outside of Damon Harrison, or what? It's a fun group to think about this year, I think.
And that's exactly what Chris Ballard wants, right? I mean, T.Y. Right. McGill is one of the few defensive linemen that consistently made plays last year in both training camp and then during the season. And it's a lot of competition, right? That's the buzzword right now with Chris Ballard. You will not believe how many times he says that. And we haven't even got to the linebackers yet, which is sort of the same kind of thing. So it'll be really interesting. I think there's going to be position battles at maybe 9 spots on the defense. I mean, maybe I'm exaggerating, but maybe not. So it's going to be really interesting to see how it evolves.
Right. And you kind of touched on it with the inside linebackers. Now, I've heard that they've been rotating those guys in and out as far as first team guys.
I mean, it was hard to keep up. It was hard to keep up with how many guys they were shuffling in and out. And even Chuck Pagano said after practice, like, I wouldn't put a lot of stake into where we had guys today.
Sure.
There's 90 guys out there. They're shuffling them in and out. So that's another group that's really, really, I mean, it's brand new. You don't recognize any of those numbers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think somebody from Bleacher Report, I can't even remember who the author was, but they were talking about that they think that Sean Spence is kind of the hidden gem of that inside linebacker core. And, you know, I've gotten a little more excited about him. I mean, it's hard with the injury history and a guy who's never really done anything phenomenal. He does everything good, but nothing, you know, expert, you know, so to speak, as far as in NFL standards. But I tend to agree that he's probably going to be the most reliant guy out of that group. You know, Morrison has issues holding, you know, his keys and stuff. Edwin Jackson has some.
And in coverage, he was a huge liability. He got better, but you could just tell quarterbacks were licking their chops to go his way.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. In fact, there were several times you could see them completely alter the play at the line of scrimmage to go after him, especially when
he looked totally lost.
Yep, he did a lot last year. I've heard that, and like you said, you know, I know that it's OTAs, but look, I mean, we're in a huge dent in the offseason here, and we have very little to talk about of any substance, but there's Antonio Jackson, or Antonio Morrison.
Jackson.
Yeah, Antonio Morrison has been getting some nice compliments, I guess, as far as that he's kind of, you know, getting it. And that would be, you know, that in itself would be a huge upgrade for him next year. Just having the between the ears part of it down, that would be a big upgrade.
It's a lot. I remember having conversations with him early in training camp, and it's a lot to digest. And he was a fourth round guy out of Florida. And you could just tell the learning curve with some guys is not very steep. Like Andrew Luck caught on pretty much like 2 weeks in. Antonio Morrison, it took some time, and it's a tough position. And really, you know, because of the mistakes by Ryan Grigson, guys like Edwin Jackson and Antonio Morrison were your starting linebackers by December. You know, I remember that going to that game in New York against the Jets, and Nicole Jackson had been suspended, and this is where they were at. They were playing in these must-win games, trying to scrape their way in the playoffs, and they've got a rookie who's had a rough year in there, and Edwin Jackson, you know. So it's just, it goes back to that competition point. They can't have guys just starting because they're the only guys left on the team. So I think throwing all those guys at that inside linebacker spot, Sean Spence included, it's going to just bolster that group a little bit more. And the guy that's going to be the starter is going to be the guy that won the job, as opposed to, well, you're still on the team, so here's the job, you know?
Right. Let me go to the safeties here real quick. Is there anything that kind of gives you pause about Darius Butler being a safety?
I don't know if Darius Butler's a safety right now. I mean, I know what they're saying. I know what they're telling us. I think he's a defensive back because I'm just hesitant to see him 100% in one of those roles. We know the training camp guys are going to go down. We know Vontae Davis's history. The guy was on the injury report every single week last year. It was like him and Andrew Luck. And Vontae Davis plays through as much pain as anybody on that team, whether we know it or not.
Mm-hmm.
But the safety is an awfully crowded room right now. I know that Clayton Gathers is a giant question mark, but I wouldn't be surprised if Darius Butler is sort of a hybrid safety / slot corner, just, you know, play both positions kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be interesting to see because I'm not sold on TJ Green either. TJ talked a big game last week. He said, look, I want to start. I'm a competitor. You know, what do you think, TJ? This is what we asked him. What do you think? When they draft a safety in the first round, you know, they drafted you just last year in the second round.
Mm-hmm.
And he said all the right things. He said, you know, more competition, that's great, makes the team better. I don't know where that leaves him. And the Clayton Gathers news obviously muddies the water a lot. So safety's it's kind of like a defensive line. It could be a great unit, especially if Malik Hooker comes back and catches on quickly, which I'm not ruling out happening. I don't know where that leaves Darius Butler, but I think he's too valuable of a player to not be on the field. And there's just nothing at corner nothing there right now.
Mm-hmm.
Quincy Wilson, he's going to take his lumps. Every corner does. It's a rookie. So we'll see. But I wouldn't be stunned to see Darius Butler back at that slot cornerback by like maybe week 5 or week 6 or something.
Mm-hmm. And when we look at the corners, I think that it's pretty fair to consider that Quincy Wilson, I mean, there doesn't seem to be a sure thing. You know, back in the Grigson days, it seems like, you know, if Grigson makes a move for a guy that's got the name, he's going to start. You know, we saw
it Antonio Cromartie. Greg Soler.
Absolutely. And then, you know, now we've got Wilson in here getting drafted by Ballard. Different guy, obviously, running the show. But you almost assume that Wilson's the starter opposite Vontae. So now when you look at, like, who's the backup there and who's the guy in as the nickel corner, you look at Rashawn Melvin as a guy who got a ton of snaps last year, important snaps last year. And he's got the toughness, as far as I'm concerned, to really try to bolster that defense. And like you said, you know, you see Butler as somewhat of a hybrid between the two positions there. I think that could really benefit the Colts in the end. Something to where they don't have to use TJ Green, where he's the physical guy, but they can use two coverage guys a lot more often when the opposing offenses go into some of their four receiver sets or just whatever.
Yeah.
I'm really looking forward to see how Melvin grows from last year, because like I said, he was nobody last year. He was just off the street for the most part.
He was off the street in week one.
Yeah.
I mean, and we don't give him enough credit, because he was probably, you know, when we say it's Vontae Davis and a bunch of guys, I mean, Rashawn Melvin is definitely a guy. He doesn't a guy that really excites you, but he got better over the course of the year, and he definitely was their second best corner last year. I mean, Patrick Robinson was so far out of the picture.
Right.
And Melvin's absolutely a guy that could win the job in week one. You know, this is something that stuck with me that Chris Ballard said, and maybe he's just saying this to say it and sound like, you know, he believes in this, but he said, look, if you talk about competition, you have to live it. And he says it doesn't matter where you're drafted. It doesn't matter where you come from, whether you're an undrafted guy, a fifth-round guy, first-round guy, whatever. The best guy's going to start. The best guy's going to play. And this is when they signed all those undrafted free agents. And I get that. You're giving guys an equal opportunity. But just talking to a lot of these guys in the defensive backfield over the years, they don't know what's going on their first couple seasons. I mean, Mike Adams said, I just remember watching the quarterback throw it and run into the ball. I mean, and Quincy Wilson is a young guy, and I know he played at a big-time school in Florida, but Andrew Luck's going to tear him apart in training camp. I can guarantee you that.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm not ruling out the fact that Rashawn Melvin earns that job maybe early on, and we'll see how Quincy Wilson handles that. But it's a tough job to walk into. I mean, look, he's going to be going against T.Y. Hilton and Dante Moncrief most days, mm-hmm. and they're not going to take it easy on the rookie, so we'll see. But the defensive backfield's got – it's got Vontae, and you know he's going to be knocked out of camp a couple of days just with some nicks. But then you've got some young guys who are going to have to step in and prove it, and that includes Malik Hooker as well.
Right. Let's transition to the offense real quick and kind of talk about Moncrief. I just put together some film on him and did an article for him or on him about kind of his difference between how productive he was inside the 25-yard line versus how he was throughout the rest of the field. Last year. Now, granted, he only played 9 games last year, so I mean, his overall stat line was down. But even if you prorate his stat lines into a 16-game season, his production was still down from last year, from 2015. That is, where I mean, there was a lot of batted balls, a lot of bad passes, a lot of stuff that kind of made his season look, at least between the 20s, look under, you know, undervalued for sure. He has a lot of room to grow, though. And in order for him to solidify that number two spot, he's really got some competition now. And you brought up Dorsett earlier. I'm not high on Dorsett, but I really think that if there's a guy on the offense who's going to make significant strides into this year, I think it has to be Dorsett.
Yeah, and it totally could be. Like what's holding him back?
Right.
You know?
He's a good route runner.
And he's got good hands. But you look at I think the touchdown number in two seasons is 3.
Yeah.
And we could go on and on about that. He's first round pick, et cetera. I understand that. But with Moncrief, like you said, it's between the 20s. He's not a complete receiver right now. There's no other way to put it. And I give T.Y. Hilton a lot of credit, because you could have maybe said that about T.Y. before last season. Mm-hmm. He was the big play guy, and he made some big plays, and he's the downfield threat and all that stuff. T.Y. put on a show last year, and he was consistent, and he made the big plays at the end of the games, but he also was the most dangerous guy every time they lined up behind center. And Moncrief just kind of disappears in the middle of games. And if you look at the quarterback, Andrew Luck does not look Dante Moncrief's way in the middle of the field. He looks at two guys. He looks at T.Y., And then his safety blanket is Jack Doyle. And you can absolutely tell because his safety blanket used to be Kobe Fleener. And it was never Dwayne Allen. And that's probably why he's gone. But Dante Moncrief, for the size that he has, I mean, you see what he does in the red zone. And he's lethal. That's when it changes. When they get inside the 20, Andrew Luck's thinking, where's 10? Where's 10? And he throws it up and he gets it every time. And his touchdown rate is unbelievable in the red zone. But look, I like what T.Y. said. And Dante liked it a couple weeks ago. He's going into a contract year. It's him and Jack Newhart who will be in the fourth year of their rookie deals, looking to get that second payday, which is everything in this league. And T.Y. said, look, if you want that money, you got to go get it. For Dante Moncrief, that means becoming a more complete receiver and not just being a guy that has maybe 300-400 yards and like 9 touchdowns. It's like 800 yards and 10 touchdowns. Yeah. So, and look, Philip Dorsett, it's now or never, bud. You know, if you're going to take that number 2 spot or if you're going to solidify your spot, it's got to happen this year because there's no allegiance with this new general manager. He didn't pick you in the first round. He doesn't need to keep you to save his name.
Yeah, and he's super cheap, too. I mean, if it comes down to it in the end to get rid of, as most rookie deals are anyhow. But it just seems like that's a guy who, I mean, he doesn't have great size or anything like that, but he's ultimately a stronger, more bulkier version of T.Y. with a little bit more size. I mean, but if you look at Hilton, the way he gets off of press coverage, and you kind of said this, the way that he was a big play guy, could come across the middle, he put it together all last year, but he also put it all together last year with the defenses knowing that that's the guy to stop, and they couldn't stop him.
Yeah, and T.Y. it doesn't get enough credit for how slippery he is, and his routes are so precise. It's really a thing of beauty to watch if you like the game of football.
Absolutely.
It's not nearly as perfect as watching like Marvin Harrison do it, but T.Y. has gotten a lot better at that. And if you talk to the Colts receivers coach or Moncrief and Dorsett, you know, like you said, I mean, he's the same size as Dorsett. They're both so fast it doesn't matter who's faster, right?
Right.
It's not like Dorsett has terrible hands. What's the difference? T.Y. is a master running those routes, and his rapport with Andrew is legit. I mean, that's a real thing. And that's why they made so many big plays over the years. So Dorsett's got to do that. And this is something I go back to at the end of training camp last year. You know, Andrew Luck was okay in training camp. He had some good days and some bad days. T.Y. Hilton was fantastic in training camp last year. Andrew Luck said he was the best player on the team, and I really agree with him. Mm-hmm. And then what did he do that season? You know, he led the NFL in receiving yards. So there's the translation there. You saw that. I mean, 2012, who was the best player on the field during training camp? It was Reggie Wayne, and he was phenomenal that year too. So you see that work sort of, you know, lend itself to the rest of the season. That's why I'm going to be keeping a very, very close eye on Philip Dorsett during training camp, because this is, like I kind of just mentioned, this is a huge year for him, and you just see him, he's just not involved in the offense as much as you think.
Right. You know, it's really interesting watching he and Hilton both run their routes. And when I say precise, I mean that Dorsett squares his off a little bit more than Hilton does. Hilton kind of rounds off a lot of his. But I think Hilton's got the timing down to a T, and I think that's really where that rapport with him and Luck comes in. Dorsett, he may or may not be running the right, you know, yardage, depth, or whatever of his route. We don't know that necessarily. But there is just that chemistry between those two is so thick, and Dorsett's got to, you know, kind of scrape and claw to get a piece of that this year. I'm just really interested to watch it. Another guy that I'm interested to watch as far as in the receiver game is Swoop. I'm really interested to see if he can kind of, you know, not turn the corner, but really blast off and become a playmaker, because it with Doyle being the sure-handed guy, the short route guy, the good blocker, the everything kind of guy, the only thing he's not is fast. And you've got Swoop, who has that ability, but he showed some hands last year. He's definitely a work in progress when you think about blocking. But Swoop could have himself a really nice year this year with everything there are so many weapons on this offense that Swoop just he could fall into a 400, 500 yard season, and it wouldn't surprise anybody.
Yeah, I think it's fair to say you're going to get what you get out of Jack Doyle, right? I mean, he's just going to be Mr. Consistency, and that's sort of the beauty in his game, that he's not going to surprise you with how well he plays, because I think he's really just going to step into the starting role and just be as good as he's ever been. Mm-hmm. With Swope, it kind of excites you in a way because the upside is so high. Right. He just continued to get better and better last year. And I've had some long conversations with him, and this guy's confidence is growing by leaps and bounds. And you hear that a lot from NFL locker rooms about how confident guys are. Swope is figuring out the game. It's slowing down for him, and he's really becoming confident in his role. And I really think the Colts shipping Dwayne Allen off to New England, it could be the best thing that's ever happened to Eric Swope's football career, because he gets to step into that number two role. He doesn't have to take the bulk of the catches. That's Jack Doyle, right? He's just going to get you those catches across the middle. Swope could be a big play guy, and you saw that in flashes last year. He handled the moment well. There was one game where Luck went to him on the first pass. He dropped it. It was on nobody. It was on him. And then he recovered and made a big play right after that. So he's got the metal. And he's really a guy that really can be the big play guy from the tight end group. And I really think the confidence is going to be a big, big thing for him this year. And I think it's growing. And I think he could be, I mean, who knows how much better he can get this year. That's the exciting thing.
Yeah, it really is too. And, you know, a lot of what we're talking about, none of it really goes anywhere without this offensive line showing the same improvement they showed from, you know, week two to week 17 or 16
Correct.
Last year. So are you a believer in this offensive line making strides going into 2017?
I'm a believer in patience. the right side still really worries me, and there's gonna be bad days. But look, based on everything we've heard, and we've talked to all of them, and we've done this in the past, and we haven't heard these things, so maybe this is actually happening. I mean, they're spending a lot of time together. They're all young guys. Costanzo's the oldest one. He's going into year seven, I believe. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's going to matter because they finally figured out the center position last year, so that's one less thing to worry about.
Right.
And they've got some competition on the right side, which will be a good thing. I think it's LaRaven Clark's. I think it's going to be his job. I think it's going to be the right tackle job is going to be his to lose at this point.
Right.
So that means Denzel Good goes to right guard. And Joe Hegg has sort of been filling in at left guard right now. But I think Joe Hegg's going to find himself in the starting lineup by week one just because he's so good and so versatile. We'll see who gets left out. But look, the bottom line is they're all young guys. They got better as the season went on. Philbin really does have their we've seen Philbin, you know, up close coaching them. He's really on them, and I think he's really going to help them, you know, sort of get better as the season goes on. I think it was 34 sacks through the first 8 games last year, and then maybe 9 through the last 8 games. I could be a little bit off, but you see what I'm doing. I mean, there was significant progress. You saw it in the tape. You saw it in Frank Gore's yard. You saw it in Robert Turbin's touchdown. But I just still think that right side is a little shaky. I don't think LaRaven Clark's there by any means. Mm-hmm. I mean, he started, I think, 2 games last year, and he played well. That's great, but that's 2 games. And teams are still going to attack the edges like crazy, and that includes Anthony Costanzo. So, I think they're going to be middle of the pack this year, but that is progress.
Yeah, that's a big improvement.
Right. I mean, that's everything for them because they've been the bottom of the league for so many years. But I don't know. We're going to have to see, but I think they're finally inching their way towards mediocrity.
Yeah. And, you know, I don't know if it's built in me or what, but after seeing, you know, like you saw him in training camp just as well, LaRaven Clark last year in training camp and preseason was just god awful, you know, and then.
When he went into a preseason game, I was saying, Andrew Luck needs to be out of the game because he's not going to finish the season.
Right.
I mean, you know, after 2015, that's the last thing they need is Andrew Luck on his behind again.
Yeah. And then, you know, you hear a little bit about it throughout the season that they're talking about LaRaven Clark when he hasn't even, you know, been in for a legit snap all year. He's working. He's doing better. He's getting better. But that's coach speak, you know, until you see it.
Yeah. Can't buy that.
No, and then you actually, you know, when he actually gets some time and some serious snaps in at the end of the season, you see that improvement. And like you said, you know, and I'm pretty sure that you tweeted about it because I tweeted about it as well, and I noticed yours last year during training camp as well, and you brought it up again here about how Philbin coaches them, especially in camp. It was a constant thing where he was just always coaching, and it seemed like that was kind of the new style for the coaching staff last year for some of those guys. Monachino was similar, I thought. and those guys were just not on them so much, but it was more of a, it was just a constant coaching clinic as opposed to, okay, move and do this drill. You know, there was no break in that before. It was always positive. It was always instructing, or always instruction. And that was a good thing to see. It was something that was noticeable to me only for the 4 or 5 days that I was down there.
Yeah, and there's a couple of things that go into that. One is when we watch practice every day, the offensive line group is right in front of us. They're 5 feet from us. So we can watch Joe Philbin work. And we can't see the receivers. They're on the other end. We can't see the running backs, et cetera. But I'm learning more about the offensive line than I ever have in my life. and that's interesting. And look, it was different last year. It was different with Joe Philbin running the offensive line as opposed to Joe Gilbert. And Joe Gilbert's still there, and he's still coaching them to a degree, but it's definitely Joe Philbin running this unit. Mm-hmm. And you saw the progress. And then the second thing is what Chris Ballard said, because I think everything to this point we can believe, because he's lived up to everything he said. So there's no reason to think he's just, you know, fooling us. Right. He said he really, really likes what Ryan Grigson did with the offensive line the last year. He spent 4 of his 8 draft picks on offensive linemen. It started with Ryan Kelly. And he said, look, you know, he did a great job of assembling some young talent. And you go back to the previous Colts era, you know, that offensive line took years to gel, and then they were really, really consistent for a long time. That's what you envision with this one. These guys are still really young. I mean, they're in year 1, 2, 3, the bulk of them. Mm-hmm. Costanzo's the outlier on the side. But look, I mean, it's going to take some time. But to hear Chris Ballard say it, you know, he didn't spend any picks on the offensive line besides Zach Banner this year, just 1, and he had 8 picks.
Right.
So that tells you something. You know, all the national media were like, oh, they need to draft offensive line.
Every year.
Like, you haven't really been paying attention to this team, have you?
Right.
That's sort of the national narrative, the uninformed. But the progress was there last year, and Chris Ballard saw it, and it reflected by his draft picks. So we'll see. But I think he's pretty bullish on this group right now.
Mm-hmm. I think so, too. I've been a bit of a supporter from him towards the end of the season last year and all the way through the offseason. I'm excited to see what they can grow into. Nothing's ever for sure, especially with offensive line, but it is a group that that is definitely going to be fun to watch, and you can see the hope there that that's brewing a little bit. Zach,
right.
I'll kind of end on this one, and I want your honest opinion on what you see in Ballard. Do you think a lot of what he says, I mean, I think that most of us, if not all of us, believe that when he speaks, he believes what he says. Do you think that a lot of what's coming out, that his mantra of competition and the things that he says that we don't know about behind closed doors to this team, do you think a lot of that is just really soaking in and making any changes to maybe the headspace that this collective unit as a football team is in?
I really have no reason not to. And it's easy to be the GM before the games start, right? He hasn't lost any games yet.
Right.
He hasn't made any draft picks that are terrible yet, right? I mean, we don't know, at least. But he's been consistent from day one. And these aren't canned statements. And you can tell when you're talking to a guy if he believes what he says or if he's just saying it. He's a good interview. He thinks about the question and he tells you what you think, what he thinks. And that's, for me, that's really refreshing, right? Ryan Grigson was the same way. I'll give him credit. Mm-hmm. He was very honest in interviews. He was a little combative at times. But look, he told you what he thought. I would love the head coach to do that, but I don't think that's going to happen. But look, with Chris Ballard, there's one thing that jumps out that's different about this franchise right now with him in charge. It's what he has said about Andrew Luck. He said from day one that this is not about Andrew. This is never going to be just about one guy. And that has been the problem too much the last 5 years, right? I mean, it's hard to build a defense when you're paying Andrew what we are. Well, you weren't paying Andrew that the first 4 years, and
exactly.
You still couldn't build a defense. So, you know, it all kind of correlates together. I really think Chris Ballard looks at his roster and says, we need to be the best we can be at every position. And, oh, it's really great that we have this prodigy at quarterback, but that's not the reason we're going to win a Super Bowl. And if you build a team with that mindset, which I think he's trying to do, I think that's a total shift from where they were, right? That was the problem, right? It was Andrew trying to, you know, overcome for Trent Richardson, trying to make up for the offensive line, trying to do everything with T.Y. Hilton and a defense that was going to give up 30, 35 points a game. You know, look at what he did in week 1. He put up 34, and I think he threw for 4 touchdowns, and he still got beat. You know, what else does the quarterback need to do? That's been the problem. I think Chris Ballard saw that. There was just so much so many holes on this roster. And I think if you take it away from 12 and take off the pressure, I think Andrew will be happier, and I think everyone else will be happier because they'll win a lot more games. So we'll see. It's early. But, man, the schedule is really favorable, especially early in the season. So they could get out to a hot start. We'll see. But the defense is still, you know, I'm just going to be wait and see mode with this defense until they actually play some football games.
Mm-hmm. Me too. But it is a bit of hope, though, as you look at kind of the change in defense, the significance of the offense, the weapons. We still have got Andrew, the hope for the offensive line. A lot of things seem, at least on the surface, to be going in the right direction. So it's a hopeful for 2017. But then you kind of look, and there's been plenty of national and local people that are saying, look, 2017, we may surprise, we may not. But, you know, you look at 2018, if everybody continues to improve. And 2018 could be a year where they actually get back to themselves.
Yeah, and I think – It takes 2 or 3 years to build a defense, right? I mean, they really just blew everything up this year, and that was the right move. But you just don't do it overnight. I mean, the Giants had a really good season this year after spending a lot of money in free agency. But that's really rare. That's just really rare. It takes years to build a defense. They've got a lot of young guys. They're going to have to grow. So to really contend with the best of the best, it's going to take a couple years. But the good news is they have a quarterback that can win a game, you know, really, because he's so talented. And they're in a division that really is winnable every year. And who knows what Houston's quarterback situation is going to be. But, you know, the Colts obviously are going to have a chance in December this year. Maybe they'll actually win the game against the Texans this time as opposed to lose it to Brandon Whedon or a Brock Osweiler.
Yeah, that's bad news. That's poor memories there. That makes my brain hurt a little bit thinking about that.
It's been a long couple years, that's for sure.
It has. Zach, I appreciate you jumping on with me tonight, man. It was good to get another point of view, good to talk to you, and really appreciate your time tonight, man.
Absolutely. It was fun. Would love to do it again.
Absolutely. Anytime. You guys can catch him on Twitter at ZKiefer. Make sure you guys are calling in to the call-in line. It's 574-516-2881. Make sure you guys are following myself at MDainley_NFL on Twitter. And as always, continue with the Apple Podcast reviews and ratings. Those are fantastic. They're really helping the show grow. And it's all because of you guys. So thank you all for listening. And I'll talk to you guys on Friday right here on Locked On Colts.
You are Locked On Colts, your daily podcast on the Indianapolis Colts, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.